Jackson, I would like to poll all of you to take a vote. This morning, the weatherman said, there might be a frost. There wasn't, you may have noticed. But it was cool in here, and I really didn't know what to do with the thermostat, so I didn't do anything. How many want me to turn on the air conditioner, and how many want me to turn on the heater? How many want me to just leave it the way it is? How many want the air conditioner on? Raise your hand. How many like it just the way it is? Well, air conditioner people, you're going to have to take off your coats. That hymn we sang is most associated with Christmas. And that's what we most associate Jesus' mother Mary with, the Christmas narrative. You know, down through the centuries, Mary, the mother of Jesus, has come to be a symbol of the perfect mother, the ideal of motherhood personified. And I believe that perhaps she is. However, if you leave all the traditions aside that have grown up since biblical times, and just go back to Scripture itself, in the Bible, the way Mary is portrayed there, the qualities that made Mary such an ideal and perfect mother did not necessarily make her unique. Well, the Christmas story, for instance. Perhaps they didn't actually have a vision of an angel. But you know, I suspect that many of our mothers, and many mothers here, during their first pregnancy, maybe especially, believed that what was growing in them, moving in them, I still remember the little hand going back and forth, or foot, or whatever that was going back and forth, that was something really special, something truly God-given. And when that firstborn child came along, I think many a mother saw their newborn as mother's little angel, and not just figuratively, but really, looking at, you know, when you think about it, babies aren't very impressive. Especially, I mean, I've witnessed a couple of childbirths. Birth of one of my own children, and I was actually there with a husband and a wife. They were doing Lamaze, and the husband, who was in medical school, I don't know what ever happened to him, but he passed out. And so the nurse came out and got me to help the wife with her breathing exercises, which I found, you know, because he's just laying there. It was a very strange experience. But anyway, when children first come out, they really look like they're not done. They look like you probably ought to put them back in for a while. They really don't come out looking all that hot. And even, you know, after they've been around for a matter of a few weeks, they're helpless. They can barely focus their eyes. Their only way of expressing themselves is by crying or burping or occasionally smiling, which may not mean what you hope it means. And yet you look at this little helpless infant, and a mother can look at that child and see just possibilities. Like, this kid could be anything. Like, this child is special. Like, this infant is destined for something wonderful. In other words, all those things that the angel inspired Mary to see in her child. And while there may not have been any shepherds or wise men among them, a lot of people with infants have the experience of even total strangers coming up to them and wanting to look at the child. You take your infant to the mall, you put him in their pram and their baby carriage and walk down the sidewalk as I see mothers doing out my front window. And people are naturally drawn to the infant. They come up, they want to look at the baby. People are obviously total strangers. And they always say something nice. I mean, they never say, I mean, even if they thought it, they would never say, boy, that's a funny looking kid you've got there. First of all, because it wouldn't be polite, and second of all, mother has all those full baby bottles. But no, it's just expected to ask to look at a newborn and to compliment the mother on what a special child it is, how beautiful the child is. And if you're a politician, even kiss the kid. But while the visitor's compliments may not always be that sincere, maybe just saying what's appropriate, what's polite, I think many a mother has taken these things to heart. Many a young mother has treasured the words these people have said about her child and pondered them in her heart, just as Scripture tells us Mary did. Spiritually or metaphysically speaking, I don't believe the gospel, the good news, is that the Christ can only be born in and through special people, perfect people. My reading of the good news of Jesus Christ is that the Christ is born in and through regular people, ordinary people. People like you and me and average young mothers and fathers. That's how I read the gospel. Or consider the next experience we have with Mary in the Bible. It's when Jesus is today they call him a tween, I suppose. He's somewhere around 12, 13 years old. They're on a trip to Jerusalem. A pilgrimage, kind of a family vacation. He's wandered off. Mary and Joseph, they search for him high and low for 3 days before they finally find him in the temple where we're told he's just spiritually precocious, amazing. Amazing, the wise teachers in the temple with his insights. Mary is not as impressed as the wise teachers are. She says, didn't you think about your mother once? And when Jesus replies, but knew you not I'd be in my Father's house, referring to the temple, the obvious answer is, If they searched 3 days before they found the temple was the last place they would have thought to look for him. Just as, well, if at that age my folks couldn't find me, it would never, ever occur to my mom to look for me at church. Amazing, the pastor and my Sunday school teachers with my wisdom. No, she probably figured I was somewhere I wasn't supposed to be, doing something I wasn't supposed to be doing. She probably would have been right, and she would have found me. Because the woman was like psychic about stuff like that. If I was up to no good, mom would find out. Not dad so much, unless, of course, I mean, mom would tell him. But when it was, wait till your father gets home, she's the one to tell him. I mean, he didn't know. He just walked through the door. Do you know what your son did? No. Mom's the one that knew. But Mary didn't know what Jesus was up to, which tells us a few things. It tells us that while Mary clearly loved Jesus, she didn't always understand him. Our mothers don't necessarily understand us. Their job isn't to always understand us. Their job is to always love us. That's the job description. And Spiritually speaking, it teaches us that as the Christ consciousness unfolds in us, it can lead us to unexpected places, to inspirations and insights beyond what we normally think of ourselves as being capable of intellectually. Ideas can come to us that we didn't expect. We can say things wise enough that we wonder where that came from. But humanly speaking, I don't know if there is a mother alive, or at least not many, that haven't from time to time felt, especially when their perfect little child became a tween, started to become an adolescent, that didn't have the passing thought that someone had taken away that little boy or girl that loved to hug them and was so adorable and replaced them with this horrible, surly teenager. And wanted to say to them, what have you done with my son? What have you done with my daughter? I think this is not an unusual thing on Mary's part. I think this is a fairly typical thing, something a lot of mothers and fathers experience. I think this kind of makes Mary like the rest of us. Or in our next encounter with Mary in the Bible takes place at Jesus' very first miracle. It's where he turns water into wine at a wedding feast in Cana of Galilee. And, well, if you read it the way it's usually translated, there's a little bit of an edge to Jesus' dialogue with his mother. When the wine gave out, the mother of Jesus said to him, they have no wine. And Jesus said to her, woman, what concern is that to you and to me? My hour has not yet come. Well, we tend to, that sounds a little cryptic, and there's a little bit, the way it's usually translated, of ma, get off my back in it, when actually it could just be a translation problem. If you go back to the original language, you could just as well translate that passage with Jesus saying, leave it to me, it's not my turn yet. Because in those tiny villages in Galilee back then, just as maybe in a small town today, where those tiny villages where everybody knew everybody else, a wedding feast was a big deal. It was a big deal. And I mean, they could literally party for days. And the custom was for guests to bring wine. And you wouldn't just open all the wine at once. No, what you do is you'd open the wineskin that the first guest brought, and everybody'd have a little of that. And everybody'd toast the person that brought the wine and toast the bride and groom. And when that was all done, they'd open the next person's cask or skin full of wine, and so forth until it ran out, and you wanted to have enough wine to last for days. And you would generally have the older and more revered, wealthier members of the society share their wine first. First of all, because they were of higher status in the community, but mostly because they could probably afford better wine. Because, you know, if you've ever been to a wine tasting, the first couple of glasses, you have some ability to taste the difference. But after about 3 days, I don't think you could tell Dom Perignon from cold duck. You know, it'd all be about the same, and nor would you even care. People didn't drink that often, but they were serious about it back then when they did it. So Jesus might have just been saying, it's not my turn yet. I'll do it when it's my turn, don't worry. In any case, his mother doesn't seem to be upset by what he says. She just simply tells the servants to do whatever Jesus instructs them to do. And that's it. But you know, There may be a reason why some translations do have a little bit of an edge in this dialogue. And again, it's a reason that I think a lot of mothers can understand. Well, a lot of us can understand too. Because many of us have had times, I'm sure if you're sitting next to your mother right at this moment, you're not thinking this. But many of the rest of us whose mothers aren't here today had times when it did seem like mom was nagging us a little bit to do what we were supposed to do. She was, well, not nagging, at least strong, reminding us often about something we'd promised to do. And let's be fair, I suspect there are a few mothers in the room that from time to time felt like they had to nag their child a little bit to get them to do something promised, beginning with clean up your room in childhood and working all the way up to when they were adults. It's little of that is part of the relationship, part of the typical relationship. By the way, spiritually speaking, turning water into wine, that miracle could be seen as symbolic of the fact that the emerging Christ Spirit in us can allow us to see possibilities, symbolized by the wine, where other people, and where formerly even we ourselves, would have only seen limitations. To see opportunities where others see only challenges. To see doors where other people only see walls. The emergent Christ Spirit, that paraclete, that comforter that Jesus talked about, that Spirit of truth, it can do that for us. The next incident, the next time we meet Mary in the Bible, well, Jesus is a little mean. He's not really that nice to his mother. A lot of us had experiences where we weren't as nice to our mother as we later wished we had been. And this is one of those times. It happens, it's recorded in a couple of the Gospels, when Jesus is about his business as at the time they would have thought of him as an itinerant, a traveling rabbi. Today I guess you'd call him an evangelist. But he's going around, he's teaching, he's got his disciples, he's busy with his ministry. And he's teaching one day, and somebody comes up to him and says, your mom is outside and wants to talk to your mom and your family. Says, his mother and his brothers came, we read, standing outside, and sent to him and called him, and the crowd was sitting around him. By the way, when it says his brothers, that's how it's usually translated. The actual language is his siblings. We develop other traditions later on, especially after the 4th century. But biblically speaking, Jesus, or Mary, let's say, presumably with Joseph, apparently had several sons and daughters. And some of, they're referred to in 3 or 4 places in the Gospels. And in the book of Acts, at least one of Jesus' brothers, where we get the idea, became an important part of the early Christian church. So Jesus had younger siblings, brothers and sisters, according to the Bible. Just like some of us may have had, or maybe we were the kid brother or sister. But in any case, he's teaching. He's told his mother and his brothers and sisters are outside asking for him. And he replies, who are my mother and my brothers and sisters? And looking at those who sat around him, at his disciples, and at those he was teaching, he said, here are my mother and my brothers. Whoever does the will of God is my brother and my sister and my mother. Spiritually, this indicates that Christ Spirit may lead us into a new understanding of who we are, and where we belong, may lead us to make connections with a kind of spiritual family or fellowship. It becomes very important to us. But humanly, well, I can't help but feel this had to hurt a little bit. I think Jesus was trying to teach a lesson, but humanly, I suspect a lot of mothers have had times when they felt what Mary, seems like to me, must have felt at the time. Like their grown children had gotten so caught up in their work or their business or their friends or their interests that, well, they kind of forgot their mom. They got a little too busy for mom. Dad, too. The idea that a mother might feel like her grown children, they never call, they never write, they never visit. This isn't an unusual thing. This is stereotypical, isn't it? They make jokes about such things, but they're not really that funny. Especially when, well, like Faye and I, you know, our sons never call. They don't even email. Now, I know that feeling well. They remember Mother's Day, they remember Father's Day, our birthdays, they call it Christmas. Might be nice if they remembered some Tuesday. Or at least if we always felt that way. But they're busy. They're busy with all the people and that are important to them and their work. And as parents, we kind of understand that. But you know, there came a time in Jesus' life when all those people that were so important to him that he seemed to give preference to over his own family, his own mother, when all of those people seemed to forget about him, turn their backs on him, abandoned him, even pretended like they never even knew him, ever. But you know what? According to the Bible, his mom was still there. His mom was still there. According to the Bible, she stood by him throughout the crucifixion. She was still there when he was taken down. And she was among those still there to be the first to find the empty tomb and receive the message from the angel that he had risen. But you know, I don't think that makes Mary so unusual either. I had a mom a little like that, maybe so did you. I think a lot of us had moms that believed in us when nobody else did. Even when we had trouble believing in ourselves, they still believed in us. That wouldn't give up on us, even if we'd gotten into trouble. Even if everybody else had given up on us. Even if we felt like giving up on ourselves. I think a lot of us had moms that just couldn't bring themselves to give up on us, though we may have given them plenty of reasons. I think there are a whole lot of moms like that. Spiritually, when we accept the Lord as our shepherd, we need to be prepared for the good shepherd to lead us in places sometimes where, where us sheep don't like it so much. Where us sheep think, are you sure you wanted me to go there? The good shepherd may lead us in places that don't look so good, that look in fact like the valley of the shadow of death. But we can have faith. We need fear no evil, no matter what the appearance, because we're promised the Lord is with us, and maybe not just the Lord. Maybe at least in spirit, Mom will be there too. The point of all this is not to knock Mary down off her pedestal, but to really appreciate the real woman she was. Not to, in any way, suggest that Mary was ordinary or nothing special. No, the point is that I believe motherhood has a tendency to bring out something special in most women. Something extraordinary in a lot of average women. Even very young mothers like Mary was. I think that all mothers have the potential to be something special, something extraordinary, just as special and extraordinary for their children as Mary was for Jesus Christ. I think that's the Bible's message of who she was. Happy Mother's Day. And now let's pray about this. Let's close our outer eyes and invoke the blessing of the one presence and one power behind all blessings. There's only one presence and one power in the universe and at work in our lives. God the good, omnipotent. Together, there is only one presence and one power in the universe and at work in my life. God the good, omnipotent, and so it is.